And welcome to episode, my gosh, 32 of Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast. Today we will be discussing Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd. I'm Jerry Shario, and as usual, it is my pleasure to bring to your attention actor, director, writer, playwright, composer, a man who needs no introduction, so that's just what I plan on giving him, Nick Santamaria.
Mr. Christian, I'm converting to Mr. Jewish. Fast you swabs. Hey, Jerry, how are you? I'm sorry.
I'm doing well, Nick. The question, I guess, is how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. I should say we're fine. All the voices in my head are fine. A little rattled lately, but still, you know.
Yeah.
I want to make a quick announcement before we go on with this.
Yes.
I was alerted that I had forgotten to post Lost in Alaska, episode number 31 of Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast, on every other platform but YouTube. As of today, that's been fixed. So if you're looking for Lost in Alaska, and who wouldn't be? I have heard more bad things about that movie since we posted this thing. Nobody likes it. Nobody yeah. likes Lost in Alaska, including us. Mm-hmm. It really is a sorrowful piece of work. It's just so, like I said, nobody seemed to care, you know? It's like, all of a sudden, it was like, how much money are we making? Oh, 150 grand. All right, let's shoot. Do you like the script? No. But I really feel like this one was for the money. You know, it was during that lawsuit with Castle Films and Universal and all that. It may even been in the back of their minds that that whole issue might have ended things, you know, with Universal. So I have a feeling they were getting in their licks, you know. Let's make as much as we can before we're away from Universal International. But today, we are talking with Jerry Shario. And I just want to say what a pleasure it is to be here again with you. And I want to ask how you're doing.
I'm doing well, sir. I'm doing well. Still adjusting to my 22-year-old son having moved out of the house 2 weeks ago. And quite honestly, I have seen him more in the last 2 weeks than I did when he was living here. He pops in fairly regular. I forgot this. Oh, I just wanted to grab. Can I borrow the? So, you know.
He's like an annoying neighbor now. He'll be borrowing money soon. Don't worry.
Except he has a key. And honestly,
I didn't know he sang.
I've threatened to change the locks on him once or twice already. So
you stay away from that boy's bagels. Anyway, you know, it's all part of the thing. It's all part of the grand show. You know, you have kids and eventually you have to kick them off the limb. You know, some of them fly far away. Some are just below you on the lower limb. You know, waiting for the crumbs to fall. And not that you're a crumb, Jerry. That's not my intention. Okay, so we are, before I go any further, let me just get that foot out of my mouth. Hold on.
Okay.
There we
Alrighty.
Go. Ah, good. Oh, so we're talking about a movie today. And
really?
Yeah, we are.
Change of pace, huh?
It is a change of pace. Well, after Lost in Alaska. We welcome any change of pace. This is called Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd. And to be honest with you, when I was a child, these would show up. Jack and the Beanstalk and Captain Kidd would show up maybe once a year on the CBS affiliate in New York. So we didn't see them all that much. So when they showed up, it was quite an occasion. It was, you know, everybody piled around the TV. And when I was younger, of course, Jack and the Beanstalk was more my favorite, you know, of their color films, which was also very special. But now, as I'm older, I like Jack and the Beanstalk. I think it really is a delight. But this one has taken over in my heart of hearts. It is just delightful. It is so funny. I laughed out loud more last night than I have in weeks. Lou does some stuff in this movie, especially when he's working with Lawton, Charles Lawton.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back. I just want to say that coincidentally, my co-author of the annotated Abbott and Costello, Matthew Conium, we discovered, as we were working together, we discovered that Charles Lawton is both of our favorite actor. Wait, both of ours favorite actor. put that together the way it should be said. We both think he was the greatest actor ever to put 2 feet on the ground. And I still hold to that. In fact, I watched all of Hunchback of Notre Dame the other night. And I could watch it again and again. And he is fabulous. He's just fabulous. I think he's so much better than, you know, the Lon Chaney version. This is so, it's just so beautiful. So Lawton is right up there. And to know that not only was he in a film with Abbott and Costello, but he was one of the hugest Abbott and Costello fans of all time. Here, I want to read a couple of things before we get started in earnest.
Okay.
Ernest goes to Abbott and Costello. Let's see. He says about Abbott and Costello, very briefly, they can't simply be described as slapstick comedians. They really have great skill, the skill of the funny man who knows how to win an audience's heart. That's from Charles Lawton. He was known to be a depressive. He had that problem. And he had told Bud and Lou that whenever he felt depressed, when he was on the road mostly, and he was during these years especially, he would look at the newspaper and find out where the nearest Abbott and Costello film was playing, and he would go see them and come out feeling 100% better. Mm. So, you know, here's a guy we have in our corner, and we're happy to have him. Great, great actor, Academy Award winner for Private Life of Henry VIII. Of course, I didn't see the first 7, so I was a little lost. But he, you know, I don't think I have to go off about Charles Lawton and his credits and how wonderful he was. This movie is another independent film, and this one was produced by Bud, and his company was called Woodley Productions. And I know Woodley was a street in the San Fernando Valley. It might have been the street he lived on. I'm not sure.
Oh,
but
yeah.
it sounds sensible. But he was quoted in interviews saying that producing was a pain in the neck, and that the funny thing was Lou finally got days off. So he wasn't there like Jack and the Beanstalk every minute producing the film, making decisions, you know, blah, blah, blah. Bud was there to, you know, be there for the supervision of the musical numbers, which took a few days. So Lou didn't have to be there. Yeah. And Bud said to the reporter, said he doesn't realize that when he gets back, I'm going to break his back. You know, he's going to have to work really hard. I'm not messing around here. You know, this is my production. So he did a really smart thing. He went to Charlie Lamont to direct. And we all know that Charlie Lamont was the king of getting things done on time and usually under budget. Mm-hmm. And speaking of budget, this one came to $701,688. And it must have galled Lou a little bit that this movie made more money than Jack and the Beanstalk. Just domestically, it made over $2 million on that investment. So Bud was a very happy man. And so we had those guys. We talked about Charlie Lamont before, so we don't have to go back, you know, looking at his resume. And Alex Gottlieb is back after producing Jack and the Beanstalk. He's back for this one. Bud really trusted Alex Gottlieb. In fact, both of them did. He was a very, very good producer, very, very responsible. And again, you know, he was very budget conscious, let's put it that way. And that was all important during this. Now, there are some quotes I wanted to read, if you don't mind, just to lead us into this, because everybody kind of had a say. This was such an unusual product, if only because Lawton was a part of it. It says that Lawton was paid $50,000 for his appearance, as opposed to Bud and Lou, each getting $125,000. But their names were at the top. Hilary Brooke had a lot to say about this movie, especially during an interview. Hilary loved the experience of working with Bud and Lou. She said, "You were just part of a gang, part of a group, and you loved them for it. You know, you didn't feel in unless they played tricks on you. They played jokes on everybody, including Lawton." But Hilary confided that she was a little concerned about working with two incredible scene stealers. "I wondered how I could outdo Lou and Charles Lawton. So I said, well, I think I'll just pad my brassiere in the picture. I want a silk shirt with long sleeves, and I'll stand on the poop deck with wind blowing. And believe me, she got that attention. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
She looks great in that pirate drag. She really does.
Yes.
Here's Bud talking. He's talking about producing. I'm knocking my brains out. The producer business is a pain in the neck, but I'll go on sticking out my neck. And then Lou says, for the first time in my life, I'm having 3 days off right at the start of the picture. Bud thought producing would be fun. He's learning. I've been through it with Jack and the Beanstalk. What headaches. Oi, 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 what headaches. And Bud says, if Lou thinks he's going to have an easy time of it in Captain Kidd, he doesn't know anything yet. We had some musical numbers to shoot, so he could take a few days off. But he'll be down to his last pants before he's through with this picture. Lou says, I told Bud I didn't like the name Oliver he gave me in Captain Kidd. He already used it in Here Come the Coeds. He said, I thought a minute and said, call me Puddin'. It makes the audience immediately think of head. So we've got the final gag about that when I win the girl, which I do, played by Hilary Brooke. So Bud's also looking at the future. He says, this is the real beginning of our careers. You can't carry the ball alone all the time. Getting a star like Lawton is a great step forward. And imagine it, he wanted to play in our picture. I'd have never had the nerve to ask him. And then Lou added, here's this Lawton, a big shot, goes around the country reading from the Bible and playing sold out houses, turning them away, and he's willing to toss in his chips with a couple of comics like us. Both of them said, that Lawton told them whenever he feels depressed, he looked over the papers to see where one of our pictures was playing, and then he'd go to it and come out feeling like a new man. What a compliment. How about that?
Yeah.
I just love that. It was a mutual appreciation society. He saw that they were so much better than people gave them credit for. And I wish he were around today to drive that point home, because it really needs to be driven home. Okay. Here's a little history for everybody. Anne Bonny, Captain Bonny, played by Hilary Brooke in the movie. She was the illegitimate daughter of an attorney from Dublin and a servant of his. So he was Dublin with the servant. So she became, they don't know what year she was born, by the way, the typical woman. But she joined the pirate John Rackham, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And she teamed up with another female pirate named Mary Read. And there's talk that the two of them had a relationship that was a little closer than, let's say, volleyball. Mm-hmm. And eventually, John Rock'em Sock'em, was arrested with all of his crew, which included Bonny. And that was in Jamaica in 1720. Now, apparently, she and Mary Read got away with not being executed like the others. All the others were hung or hanged. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they told the judge that they were pregnant. And so they got to live. I don't know what they did 9 months later, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
But who knows? Who knows? But anyway, that's a Captain Bonny, a very mysterious character. But let's talk about Captain Kidd. His name was really William Kidd, Bill Kidd. Mm-hmm. And he was born in 1645 in Dundee, Scotland. The family settled in New York when he was just a nipper. And he grew up there, and he buddied up with a lot of the politicians and the important people in New York, which was a recent Dutch acquisition. And then there was Richard Coote, C-O-O-T-E. He was the Earl of Bellomont. And he asked his trusted and beloved friend, Captain Kidd, to attack pirate ships and French ships for England. And so he was given that commission to go out and do this. Eventually, it didn't work out that well, but he got screwed. Politically, things changed. And his friend Richard Coote, who thought he was trusty and beloved, turned around on him and had him arrested. And apparently, they arrested his wife as well. And that was the last time they saw each other. And for 2 years, he languished in the worst prisons waiting for trial. And most of that time, they say, was spent in solitary confinement. So it must have been a horrible, horrible time. And I imagine he welcomed the fact that he was hanged eventually in 1701 at the age of 56. So that was his legacy. They made a movie about him in 1945, mostly fictitious, also starring Charles Laughton as Captain Kidd, and co-starring Randolph Scott as, I guess, the female eye candy, and Barbara Britton for the men. Yeah, whatever. Okay, now, the director of photography is definitely noteworthy and wonderful. Mm-hmm. His name is Stanley Cortez, real name Stanislaus Samuel Kranz, K-R-A-N-Z. Born in New York City in 1908, he is the brother of Ricardo Cortez, the actor. Very big in silent movies, making love movies with Greta Garbo, and later becoming like the real cad of pre-code movies. I think he got killed more than any other actor during the pre-code years. Some leading lady was always shooting him before, you know, he could do something horrible or more things that were horrible. But anyway, he did over, was DP for over 100 films, especially, let's say, Night of the Hunter, Charles Laughton directed. And I'm sure Charles Laughton created a relationship with him while they were shooting this film. And if you know Night of the Hunter, to me, it's one of the top 10 films of all time. And it is one of the most beautiful black and white films you'll ever see. It's just gorgeous. And Stanley Cortez should have won an Oscar. Actually, Charles Laughton should have won an Oscar as best director. But it didn't do well. And he was a very sensitive man. And he never directed another film, much to our loss. He did direct theater, though. So anyway, Stanley Cortez, Night of the Hunter. Three Faces of Eve, although why we want to look at Three Faces of Eve Arden is beyond me. You just need that one, that sarcastic look. For the great Sam Fuller, he directed Shock, DP'd Shock Corridor, The Naked Kiss. Two great, great movies. And I told you he was the younger brother of Ricardo Cortez, the subject of a great book by my friend Dale Van Nest, available on Amazon and wherever great books are sold. So that's Stanley Cortez. He passed away in 1997 at the age of 89. And before that, he was fired by, what's his name? The director of Chinatown, Roman Polanski. Oh. He didn't like what he was doing, so he fired him. And he hired John Alonzo to finish the movie. Too bad.
Before you move on, one of the things I love about this movie is that it looks fantastic.
Yes.
Sharp, and some things that you never see in Abbott and Costello movies before or again. There's like three shots that iris in. There's a wipe that happens. Now, is that all the director of photography, or is that director of the film DP joint?
I really think it's the director and the editor. In the editing room, doing optical effects and, you know, things like that. You have a good eye, Jerry. Let's put it that way. You're right. But we'll get to that when we get to it. The writer is Howard Dimmesdale. Dimmesdale. Do you remember Monty Python? That's the first thing I thought of. For you Monty Python fans.
A giant hedgehog coming over the building. Yes.
That's right. Looking for Dimmesdale. Oh, that was funny. But anyway, there's very little information about him. He was born in 1914 in Sioux City, Iowa, where most lawyers are from. And, oh boy, no pity laughs, please. And he wrote some stuff in his lifetime before he passed away in 1991. He wrote Captain Scarlet in 1952, the same year he did this movie, and then found himself blacklisted. And really took a great break from movies and actually went into television and directed some of our favorite shows, The Bold Ones, Mannix, and also some more movies in the late 50s. He did The Sheriff of Fractured Jaw, a movie made in England, a Western made in England with Jane Mansfield and Kenneth Moore. Why you would need more of Jane Mansfield is beyond me. But he also wrote on Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He wrote on Martin and Lewis's second film, My Friend Irma Goes West, which I like better than My Friend Irma. And probably because there's more Jerry Lewis. And also Air Raid Wardens. He came up with part of the treatment for that. And boy, Not exactly a great credit, I would say. But yeah, that's our friend Howard. And then, of course, I just want to mention very briefly the guy who wrote the score for this film, because he also wrote the theme song for the Abbott and Costello Show first season and our theme song for our podcast. And his name is Raoul Krashauer. K-R-A-U-S-H-A-A-R. There's two A's there. Krashauer. Raoul Krashauer. It actually sounds like a crash from an hour ago. He was born in 1908 in Paris, France. Ooh la la, je vous aime quoi, je l'aime tant mon faux, je l'aime sève. And he passed away in 2001 in Pompano Beach, Florida, which is like 2 hours from me. Yeah, I guess he retired there. Weird for a guy who worked out of, you know, the West Coast. Yeah. The family, when he was 2 years old, the whole family settled in New York from France. His father took up a job teaching arrogance and surrendering, along with the French language. No, I'm kidding. He scored a lot of low-budget films, a lot of low-budget films, lots of Westerns. He did Bride of the Gorilla with Barbara Payton and Raymond Burr. He wrote the score for Jack and the Beanstalk. And not the songs. I'm talking about the score.
Right.
He did 30-Foot Bride of Candy Rock. Lou obviously liked him and worked with him. And he wrote one of my favorite theme songs for a TV show. And it was the old Lassie show. Do you remember that old, that beautiful lilting? La-da-dum, la-da-da, la-dum, la-da-da. Yeah. Yeah, it used to make me cry when I was little. Anyway, I should never peel onions while watching a show about a dog. But anyway, he also did two movies that I saw as a double feature when I was a child. I must have been 7 years old. And these are two of the worst films I ever sat through.
Yeah.
Ready? Jesse James meets Frankenstein's daughter.
Yep.
And Billy the Kid versus Dracula.
Oh, my goodness.
And then Dracula was played by John Carradine, who was in between 90 movies. both of those were 1966, by the way. But Raoul, you know, he kept busy, did his thing. And I'll tell you, he did a great job, I thought, on the Abbott and Costello Show, the first season. Mm-hmm. Even though the incidental music while they were doing routines or pantomime bits, really nice work.
Yeah.
Okay, so the film, it's always jarring. I don't know about you, Jerry, but when I'm about to watch an Abbott and Costello movie, and there in color is the Warner Brothers logo.
Yes.
It's like, yes. Where am I?
honestly looked at it and thought, did I put the right movie in?
It's like an alternate universe, you know? but I want to say about the color in this one, it could have been Technicolor. That's how good the color is in this film. They were smart to use it, honestly, because it's held up really well, and it really does look like a more expensive version of color. So really nice there. And I love the whole opening with the treasure chest opening up, and he moves the jewels, the hand moves the jewels, and you see Woodley Productions, like it's supposed to be something. And and then we get into, I'll tell you the truth, the music in this movie, written also by the guys who wrote the songs for Jack and the Beanstalk. Uh-huh. I love all the songs except the ones that Fran Warren sings. The ballads are just awful. But the pirate songs, sorry, I love them. I can't get them out of my head. And I think there's three of them. I also like the solo he does. We'll get to that. Bill Shirley. So anyway, Warner Brothers logo, great score. And, you know, based on the songs written, Fran Warren gets a special credit. And she's a singer, Fran Warren. We'll talk about her when she shows her face. But the opening scene, the very opening scene, we see a beautiful ship out on the ocean, and we just know that it's from the Warner Brothers stock footage. they also show a shot of the ocean, which we see two more times in the movie, and one really shamefully, but we'll get to that. The song, the opening song that the pirates are singing at the very beginning, I have to tell you, this was released on December 27th, 1952. So it was a Christmas release. And of all their films, even more than Jack and the Beanstalk, this reminds me of a Christmas pantomime like a British pantomime, which yes. for those of you who don't know what that is, it would be a big show, usually based on a fairy tale or, you know, something along those lines, a legend. And there were all these characters. One comedian was in drag. Two comedians would do routines, you know, like Abbott and Costello. There would be songs and stuff, a pantomime. And this is one. And the song they're singing about the captain, the skipper, it includes Lawton turning around and mugging to the camera. It's just fantastic. And I have to say about Leif Erikson, who plays Morgan, the first mate. Yep. I'm not going to go into his history because he's in Pardon My Sarong, and you could always go back to that episode and find out about Leif Erikson. But he sings every song out of the side of his mouth. I don't know if you noticed, but I think his voice was dubbed. He can sing. And he sang in early musicals in the 30s, but it didn't sound like, you know, like he's singing in this movie. But he's singing out of the side of his mouth, the right side of his mouth, you know, and it should sound like Georgie Jessel, but he's coming out like this, and he's talking like this. It's very strange. But he's terrific. You know, he's large. He's a pirate. He's fantastic. He's got this great scar on his face. So I related to him. So after the song where we introduce the skipper, who is Captain Kidd, looking very, this is not a political statement, looking very Trump-like, if you notice. If you see him standing up there on the deck, you know, with his, you know, that look on his face, it's very, very Trumpian. But I'm not going to say anything bad, right? But anyway, I have it here. Lawton, Trump-like. All right. So then at the end of the song, they notice that they are coming upon land. And right away, they all start saying, women, women, women. And even Captain Kidd. Now, Charles Lawton was a known homosexual. And it just seemed interesting to me that his women, his delivery was almost like disgusted. Women, women, you know, like that. Everyone else is smiling and jumping and, you know, throwing babies. And he's a women. I'm sure Elsa Lanchester thought a lot about that. Aww. But anyway, Harry Wilson gets the punchline, though. Ugly Harry Wilson. Women! He does that thing with his lips. I can't even do it. But anyway, my implants will fly out and break the screen. But anyway... this is one of those transitions that I wanted to talk about because this is so weird. This whole thing is weird. Okay. Now, follow me. If you're going to watch the movie after this, watch this closely. Everyone says on the ship, women, 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 you know, and then Harry Wilson, women, blah, 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 blah. And then it cuts immediately. There's no transition. There's no wipe. There's no fade, nothing. Mm-hmm. It cuts right to land. They're already there. And the women are screaming and running around. It's as if they cut out a transition. You know what I mean? They went, it's almost modern because it's just a quick cut.
Okay.
And the editing in this scene is like, there will be a shot of like say Leif Erikson. There's a shot of him for like 2 seconds. It's not even establishing. It's not even, you hardly know who it is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they're doing this all through the scene. It's really weird. And it looks like they cut out stuff. You know, the movie's only 70 minutes. It's a little over an hour. So I'm sure they cut stuff on land there. But what I liked was the gag with Bud.
Yes!
Great way. See, Bud finally gets a great intro. No coincidence that he was the producer. But he's hugging this beautiful woman. And while... her face is away from him, Joe Kirk, Lou's brother-in-law, comes around a corner and gives her like a full kiss on the lips. And Bud doesn't see it because he's hugging her and his face is facing the wrong way. So it happens twice, you know. And then, you know, when Bud is called away, she eventually goes with Joe. But anyway, there's a running gag in this movie, and it's not that I discovered it for the first time watching it last night, but it just hit me that I did notice this before, but I never mentioned it. The barrels. It's a running
yes.
gag. Lou is
yes.
always in a barrel, and it's always exploded or broken or whatever, and he's always discovered in a barrel. Very strange. He's also referred to as barrel-like later in the movie. They said, it looks like they're waving a white flag, and it looks like it's spread across a barrel, and it's Lou. It's Lou's rear end. So Lou makes his appearance as Leif Erikson. There's lots of fighting. It reminds me of Pirates of the Caribbean in mm-hmm. Disneyland, you know, the ride.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost exactly that. The women are running around screaming. The guys are grabbing them and pulling them into buildings and this and that. It's all debauchery and craziness. And then Leif Erikson's in a fight. So he picks up this barrel and he throws it, and it crashes against a wall across the street. And who should fall out of it but Lou? Their names, Abbott's name is Rocky in this one. How about mm-hmm. that?
Rocky.
And Lou, he objected to being called Oliver again, as I read in that interview. So he suggested Puddin, and his last name is revealed to be Head at the end of the movie, which is something we loved as kids. So Lou is introduced. Bud goes over to help him up, and they do something very atypical. I think it was A Hard Day's Night where Ringo does this gag. He puts his coat down over a puddle so a woman can cross, and she falls into the puddle, you know, completely. This was done in silent films, and, you know, it's ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. It's everybody did it. But this was done beautifully. It's done as a
yes.
pantomime, right? They look so
yes.
elegant doing it. And Bud, you know, Bud is just mimicking whatever Lou is doing with the bowing and the hand kissing and all this stuff.
Yes.
You know, and it's predictable. You know what's going to happen, but it's the approach. It's the way they do it. And to me, it's my favorite version of this gag.
It really is.
Isn't it great?
It really is so well done. As you say, they bow in unison every time.
Uh-huh.
And then when the woman finally does end up to her waist in the mud puddle, they do that final bow, and that's when they break it and run for the hills.
They run like kids who just hit a baseball through a window, you know?
Yes.
They run away. I thought they did a great version of that.
Yeah.
Definitely. The other thing that made me laugh out loud, as they're walking, Bud is yelling at him as usual, you know, why do you get involved with these women all the time? Yeah, you're always getting in trouble. And all of a sudden, Fran Warren, who is Lady Jane in this movie, she's up in a second story window, and she's talking to them. Hello, excuse me. Hello. You know, like that. And mm-hmm. Lou is wasn't looking at Bud at the time, and turned around to him and said, what happened to your voice? Why are you talking like that? It got me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, but really Lou is so funny in this movie. He's just so
yes.
funny. It's like, this is our movie. I'm going to make it the best it can be, you know, after Lost in Alaska. But anyway, I love that. So here's the main crux of what's going on in this movie. Lady Jane is in love with Bruce. Bruce is a singer at the Death's Head Tavern. Death's Head Tavern. That's hard to say with a mouthful of crackers. But he sings there. And she is in love with him, and she has a love note for him. And it's in one of those little tubes. You know, you roll up the paper, and you put it in the tube, and you put the top of the tube on. Well, she throws it to Lou, who catches it in the wrong hand, which I've been doing since I'm a little kid. Always gets a laugh. but he reads a little of it. My darling, 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 I love you so, blah, blah, blah. That comes into play many times during this film. So they go to work. They work at the Death's Head Tavern as waiters. And they say, we know Bruce. We'll give him your letter. And then you cut to Bruce's song. And this is a song I like.
Girls are fun. Why pick one? One to be your wife. Great to be wild and free. Me for a bachelor's life. A bachelor's life.
I I know it's not, you know, it's sung by one of the young lovers, but I got to tell you, Bill Shirley, he's got a real goofy Dick Powell thing about him. I don't know if you noticed that.
Huh.
You know, it's kind of a goofy, yeah, boyish, kind of charming in a way.
Yeah.
I liked him. I liked him. I wasn't crazy about her, but I really liked him. I thought he was a lot of fun. And that song is just great. It's a tribute to being single and having as many relationships as you possibly can. And I sort of mirrored that in life. but anyway, here's another one of those horrible cuts that I'm talking about. Bud and Lou show up for work, and the owner of the Death's Head Tavern is there in front to meet them. And they're walking through the front door, and he says, "No, no, this is for customers. The back door is for swine." And Lou, in a close-up, looks at him and says, "I'm no pig." And then they cut. They cut to a different scene. Mm-hmm. I'm no pig. It's not a punchline. It's not anything, really. He's just, you know, showing that he knows swine means pig. But
yeah,
very strange. I think they cut a joke from there. And I'm not sure what it might have been. I don't know. It might, you know what it might have been? Because Lou liked this joke. He used it a few times. I'm no pig, but with the price of pork nowadays, should I be offended? You know, that kind of a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's used those kind of jokes before. So it might have been, they might have cut that. But who knows why? So weird. So anyway, they go around to the back. This is funny. When they go into the help, you know, where they're doing all the cooking and the dishwashing and all that stuff, they run into the guy again, the owner. And Lou says,
"He's almost as ugly as the guy who owns this place. This is the owner."
"Yeah? Oh, I am. Serve Captain Kid's rabbit as soon as it's ready."
And then after yelling at him and everything, Lou picks up a pan, and it's dirty. And he goes,
"What a filthy looking pan."
So, you've got that funny stuff going on. But then we find out that Captain Kidd is having a clandestine meeting with Captain Bonnie. Anne Bonnie is her name. And they don't trust each other. They don't like each other. They're two pirates from the bounding Maine. It might have been Massachusetts. I'm not sure. But they are I got that one on sale. They so anyway, they do this routine where Bud wants to serve Captain Kidd because Captain Kidd, you know, will probably tip big and, you know, it's an honor to serve him. He's a celebrity. And three waiters come in one at a time, each with a one with a black eye. "Oh, I spilled water and he punched me in the eye." Another one with a cut hand from a knife because something wasn't hot enough or something. And then Sid Sailor, the great character actor Sid Sailor, who had maybe the most expressive Adam's apple in the business. honest to God, it just goes up and down. It's amazing. But anyway, he comes out and he's holding his mouth. And Lou runs up to him and says,
"Wait a minute, did you wait on Captain Kidd too? No black eyes? No bruises? No broken legs? No teeth?"
So it turns out that Bud, big-hearted Bud, says to Lou, "You know, I don't know why I'm so generous to you, but you can go ahead and serve Captain Kidd." And Lou does a take that they heard in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. But so he has to go in. And when Lou asks him, "Why me? Why do I have to go in?" Well, think about it. You know, if I go and I'm incapacitated, I won't be able to visit you in the hospital. "Oh, okay. You know, I never think about that. I never think about, you know, what a nice guy you are. But, you know, I'll be here to visit you in the hospital." So Lou has to serve Captain Kidd, the violent, deadly Captain Kidd. Now, he does something that he did in Jack and the Beanstalk, which made me laugh out loud. When he spills the wine on the table and he starts scraping it from the table back into the glass.
Yes.
And if only for Charles Laughton's, you know, reaction alone, it was just fantastic. I love this scene. I love this scene. He takes the wine from Lou and then kicks him out of the room. And he crashes into the waiter with the tray. Great stuff. Just great stuff. And this also from Laughton. "I hate fat men." And Hillary says, "You're fat." And he goes, I hate myself. But then Lou comes in and he's got the Welsh rarebit that they ordered, a meal I only had once. And I, to this day, I wonder why I ordered it. It was, it's like drinking cheese. Why would you want to drink cheese? I don't get it. Anyway, so they have the Welsh rarebit. And before he went in to do this serving thing, Bud got his attention, you know, admonishing him of, you be careful with Captain Kidd because he's Charles Laughton. He won an Oscar. And the soap, which is up on a shelf, gets knocked off and into the Welsh rarebit. So it is Welsh out of ivory rarebit. Okay, so Lou is there and they're all tasting it, and they all have that horrible reaction. First, Laughton ruins a joke, I think, a joke that was first said by Joan Davis in Hold That Ghost. Just like Mother used to make, it stinks. He read it. He gave it far too much, and I think he killed the joke. It's just my opinion, you know. Just like Mother used to make, it stinks. He didn't put the space between it that you needed for that joke. But anyway, it's there, and he does it. Lou, tasting the rare bit for the first time, is, again, laugh out loud, hilarious. He takes a taste of it, makes the gesture that it's good, and then all of a sudden it hits him. The soap hits him, and he does a take that is just he's on fire in this movie. Seriously, he made me laugh so many times out loud.
Yep.
It's so funny. But anyway, so here's what this leads to, of course. They all start talking and bubbles come out of their mouths, and beautifully animated bubbles. Mm-hmm. But even better than the beautifully animated bubbles is the pantomime that Lou and Charles Laughton are doing with the imaginary bubbles. There's nothing there, and they're reacting, you know? So you have to picture it both ways. First, two actors looking completely ridiculous, reacting to nothing, and then watching them with these bubbles. And it's just fantastic. Really, really good. So, yeah, great pantomime there. And this is where he runs into the owner of the Death's Head Cavern again. And this is that dialogue I like.
Are you stupid?
No.
A nincompoop? Moronic? Idiotic? Imbecilic? What are you laughing at?
You went right on by me and didn't even know it.
The funniest joke in the movie, the biggest laugh I got out of it, is here during this time. First of all, he throws what he thinks is the love letter to Bruce, when actually it's the map to Captain Kidd's treasure on Skull Island. He picked it up while he was serving Captain Kidd quite by accident, thinking it was the love letter. But unfortunately, Captain Kidd now has the love letter. My darling, darling, darling. And now Bruce has the map. But here's what happens in the meantime. And this is brilliant. Lou is on the floor waitering. And Leif Erikson is kissing this beautiful woman. And the beautiful woman turns to Lou and says, I'll have another, meaning a drink. Lou thinks she means a kiss, because she was just kissing Leif Erikson. I'll have another. So he shrugs his shoulder and he leans down and he gives her a big kiss. And before he says to Leif Erikson, is it okay? And he says, sure, give her all she wants. So Lou is like, okay. And he gives her that big kiss. And then Leif Erikson, who wasn't looking at all, says, how about me? And that's the part that got me. Not only because it really is a clever, clever bit, but Lou leans up to give him a kiss. He's like a centimeter from his lips, ready to give him a kiss. And of course, he gets pushed into another table, causing havoc. And who should it be but Harry Wilson, the ugly Harry Wilson, who picks up Lou and says, I've seen some ugly faces in my time, but yours takes the cake. Lou actually hits him and gets away. That was kind of brave of Lou. But anyway, that's a wonderful, wonderful scene and very, very funny. So Bruce has the map. Captain Kidd and Captain Bonnie have the love letter. And Lou is a fascination to Captain Bonnie, the beautiful Captain Bonnie. Boy, does she look good in that outfit. And she just looks at him thinking that the letter was written to him, that, you know, ardent, beautiful love letter. Mm-hmm. So there must be something very special about him that she needs to find out about. So throughout the entire movie, she's fascinated by Lou. It's like, maybe she wants his brain to put into the monster. I don't know. but it is very, you know, again, Bud's in the background looking at this. It's like, huh? But anyway, they decide they have to get the map, and they dress Lou up as this lord or something. And he's got this beautiful naval outfit on, red with, you know, brass buttons and medals. And he's got this horrible fake mustache on. And he talks like this. Hello, how are you? Oh, boy. He takes on this persona. And Bud leaves him there with Charles Laughton. And Charles Laughton is just being as sweet as he can be to this, you know, important person. They do this shtick with their swords that is so funny. Captain Kidd takes out his sword, you know, to salute him, and Lou takes out his, and it comes apart. The long part comes disconnected, and he's left with the little nub, and he says, "This is for short battles," and he puts it back. But they do all this stuff. It's just so funny. And then the medals joke, old. In fact, it goes back to Rio Rita with Wheeler and Woolsey. Actually, no, it goes back to the Ramblers, a Broadway show with Clark and McCullough, filmed by Wheeler and Woolsey in 1930. The name changed to The Cuckoos, and this same joke was used in that movie in 1930. But anyway, he uses it here. Where'd you get this medal from? Oh, I got this medal jumping off the Westminster Bridge. Oh, what'd you get this one for? Jumping back. But in the old movie, there's another part to it. I got this for jumping off the London Bridge. Oh, really? What'd you get this one for? Jumping back. Oh, really? What'd you get this one for? Jumping back. You said that before. I know. It took me two jumps. So I just think they missed out, you know? It's a better punch. But again, it looks like they were just trimming things out of this movie, you know? And it mm-hmm. became a 70-minute film. Very strange. Yeah. I love at one point where they don't trust Captain Kidd, and he turns to us. He turns to the camera, and he says, "Why doesn't anyone trust me?" Oh, the things I have to do to go down in history. He has all these remarks he makes. He's just terrific. Okay, so my favorite song in the entire movie, it comes up, and this was a big, big production number in that beautiful set. And there must be like 30 or 40 chorus members. You know, they're all the crew, and they all have their girls and all this stuff. And Bud and Lou are in front, marching with Leif Erikson, who sings out of the side of his mouth. And it's a song called Tonight We Sail. Let's play some of that. And I want them to hear Bud's Milt Bronson voice. So again, nobody watched Jack and the Beanstalk to see how ridiculous Milt Bronson's voice looked coming out of Bud Abbott. And Lou did his own singing. But anyway, once they get to the ship, another one of the laugh out loud moments, and I don't know if I could explain it correctly, but it's another Lou thing that just tickles me. This was the first day of shooting, by the way, this scene, when they're getting onto the ship and Captain Kidd is there. But anyway, they get to the gangplank, and you can't board a ship unless the captain gives the okay. So Captain Kidd gives the okay to Leif Erikson to let Lou board the ship. But before he does, he starts singing the song again. Tonight we sail, tonight. And Bud slaps him in the face. And it's not an uncomfortable one. It's actually the way it should be done. You know, Lou's doing something obnoxious, Bud stops it. And he goes up the gangplank, and then Bud is next. Bud grandly goes up the gangplank. Apparently, Bud loved costume pictures, and he loved, you know, like pirate movies and stuff like that. So this must have been a lot of fun for him despite the headaches. And he was going through all that stuff with the tax man at this time. So Alex Gottlieb talked about the fact that he was a little preoccupied at times, you know, dealing with that, our beloved government. But anyway, so that's a very funny scene when he starts singing again. But he puts the boys in irons. He double crosses them. He takes what he thinks is the map. And you're going to hear this a lot. It goes back and forth. The map, the love letter, the map, the love letter. And every time he gets the love letter, it's funny. He says, "My darling, darling, this is not what I want." So he puts the boys in irons. And they need more crew. So Leif Erikson goes down, and out of the side of his mouth, he knocks Bruce on the head. And singer Bruce is now a crew member, Shanghai'd. Okay. Lawton realizes that they have the map hidden, and he has to be friendly with them to get it. So Lou and Lawton have these wonderful moments together in his quarters. And it's just a revisit to the material from Pardon My Sarong, basically. All the boat jokes, all their old burlesque boat jokes. And they're funny. There's no doubt that they're funny. And they're, to me, they're even funnier with Charles Lawton as the straight man. You know, his reactions are hilarious. It's like he's smelling bad meat, you know. But we're talking about, you know, where's the port, you know, in the wine closet. What's the other one? Oh, where he rattles off all these nautical names and Lou gets it wrong.
Morgan, set the sail on the mizzenmast and haul in the aft canopy.
Aye, that order.
Aye, aye, sir. Morgan, get over the captain's set. Spread out that mizzenmast and open up the canopies.
You're sure you have the map?
Oh, yes, sir, Captain Kidd.
They do all those old jokes, and then they are manacled. Manacles are put on Bud and Lou, and they are prisoners now. And Captain Bonnie comes over, and she agrees to help the boys by letting them loose as long as, you know, she gets the map and all this stuff, and that they get to work together. So she unlocks them, but before she does, she has to reach for the key, and that's down the front of her blouse. So she turns around very modestly and takes the key out and unlocks the boys. And then when she wants the map, Lou is about to give it to her, but realizes it's down his shirt. So he turns around modestly and does exactly what she did. That was another thing we just loved as kids. We just thought it was so funny. But anyway, the manacle scene, Lawton. Okay. This was probably the second or third day of shooting. And you have to understand that Hilary Brook would have to calm Charles Lawton down because he had no idea what it was like to work with Bud and Lou. We're talking about Charles Lawton, a man who, you know, King Lear and all these great things, you know, all the great Shakespearean plays, and God, he was just amazing. But he had to, like everyone else, she said, you know, Lou can't unlearn what he does. He just does what he does. So you're going to have to learn to work Lou's way. And they said by the third day, he never left. He never went home. He wanted to stay all day and all night and watch them. And in between takes, he didn't go to his trailer. He sat with them and talked, and they talked and talked and talked. They were buddies. It's just, I just love the idea of Bud and Lou sitting around the set talking to Charles Lawton, you know? I would have loved to have been a zipper on the wall. I mean, a fly. So the manacle scene is basically the handcuff scene from Whodunit. Charles Lawton finds Lou has been unlocked and that he got out of the manacles. And he has to show him that how to do it properly. So he puts his hands behind his back. Lou locks him up and realizes that, hey, he's my prisoner now. So Lou starts hitting him and, you know, pounding him, you know, all this stuff, all this stuff he wouldn't do if he weren't manacled. He gets Bud to come over, and Bud, are you sure he's mad? Are you sure he's tied up? Apparently, while they were shooting the scene, Lawton blew one of the takes laughing at Lou. He just couldn't control himself. I would give anything to see that take. Can you imagine? Oh my God. Anyway, so it's basically the same routine. Leif Erikson comes and unlocks it before Bud comes, and, you know, his hands are free. The thing that gets me about this is that afterwards, when Lou does his laughing into crying bit, which is one of my favorites of that gag in this movie, it really is terrific. He goes to kill Lou. He goes to kill Puddin. He lifts his sword and he's about to slice him. And that's when you realize that this guy's just as deadly as the Frankenstein monster, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, any of the monsters they meet. He's just as monstrous. You know, he was ready to kill him. But what saves them is that they come across another ship and they're going to obliterate it and steal its cargo. And it just so happens that Lady Jane is on that ship and they take her prisoner. They take her as a hostage. So Lady Jane is there and Bill Shirley, Bruce, is there. So the two lovers are together, which means we have some tough going in ballad land. some of the songs that take away a little bit from this movie. Yep. But anyway, this big attack, this big fight, you know, with the other ship is done really well. A lot of stock footage, you know, the long shots. But, there's some good fighting, good scrapping going on. But the funniest thing is Lou and Bud with the cannon. They load the cannon. They light the fuse. But it's taking too long. And they're wondering what's happening. So Lou turns it towards him and looks right into it, you know, knowing that, he loaded it and it's just not working. And he drops his hat or something and he leans down and it goes off and just misses him. So it's pretty good. It's better than the way I'm describing it. So they just decide to not use the cannon. They just use the cannonballs. So in very two-reeler fashion, they start throwing cannonballs at the people's heads. And of course they get knocked out and all this stuff. So anyway, they now have Lady Jane. They are going away from that ship. And there's one shot, again, one of these crazy shots during the fight scene, during the big battle, you cut to Lawton in close-up really, or semi-close-up. Mm-hmm. And he takes some snuff and sniffs it and lets out with a huge sneeze just as there's an explosion going off. And you see the shock in his face and it's like, what hit me? It was that. And then cut. That's it. It lasts like 10 seconds.
Yep.
This whole movie is like that. It's just, I don't know who the editor was, but he had his finger on the button. So, okay. They win the fight. Lady Jane is there. When Lou comes to see her and bring her some food, a tray of food, she says, oh, just put it anywhere. And apparently during one of the takes, Lou, quite in the ad-libbing sense, goes over to her dresser, opens the drawer, puts the tray in, and closes the drawer. And that's it. That's how he puts it anywhere. It got a big laugh on the set, and it was an ad lib. It was Lou playing around, and they kept it in. So they shot it. So this leads to the song that just drives me nuts. Sing a song of the tall pines. I'll make you a house out of pine. It's a song in tribute to pine. you know what? It's terrible. But there's one thing I want to bring up very quickly. If I were directing the movie or writing the movie, at one point, Bill Shirley and Fran Warren are singing together, right? And, taking solos, Bill sings and then Fran sings and blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, Leif Erikson sees Bud and Lou listening to the young lovers sing, and when they notice that they're being watched, Lou all of a sudden starts pretending it's him. So their voice is coming out of his, you know, his lips. Mm-hmm. And Bud is just pointing to him. Now, here's my thing. There were two people singing. There are two people standing there listening. Why didn't Bud learn the song and take over the boy's part? And Lou could have done the woman's part and it would have been 10 times as funny. Sorry, they missed the boat there. And again, it's like, Bud, get him involved. They're a team. Anyway, I just think it would have been a lot better. But interestingly also, and I laughed at this too, was the fact that while the lovers were singing, and you heard them loud and clear on the soundtrack, you cut to Leif Erikson looking like he just sucked on an age-old lemon, And I mean, he looks disgusted. And then you cut to Hillary, who looks worse. She's like, ugh. Are they commenting on the lovers? Or did they notice losing? I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I think it's funny because they reflect what we're feeling.
Yeah.
After the song, I call this, I wrote it down, slapstick heaven. Lou falls into the hallway where all the cabins are. And he does this amazing trip and then somersaults down the hallway. Now, I think that's the stuntman, but he somersaults down the hallway and then it's him. And he gets up, he brushes himself off, and he goes to lean on a door, and the door is open. He doesn't know it. And he falls into Captain Bonnie's quarters. So, and he does this incredible fall. And so she gets him up, and she says something like, you know, when I first met you, I wanted to kill you. But after reading this letter, I want to kiss you. So she grabs him and gives him this enormous kiss, breaks away, and Captain Bonnie faints. Dead away from Lou's magic kiss. And he immediately responds by turning around and walking right into the wall. And it's one of his best. And it's not so much about the actual act of walking into the wall. It's the timing. It's a brilliant comedian's sense of timing. It's just wonderful. So that's one of my favorite scenes, and it's all slapstick. So now, before they get to Skull Island, they have to search the captain's cabin for the map. He has the map now. Okay, so they're in the captain's cabin, and they're looking around, and there's a big painting of Captain Kidd that wasn't there before, but it's there now, and it looks just like him. And they do this whole thing with the porthole, which is like a window you have to lift, and you know, you look out into the ocean, right? Every time Lou opens the window, he gets hit with this enormous spray of water. It's very funny. So he closes the window and goes to Bud, and Bud's like, how did you get so wet? What are you doing? So anyway, he does it again, and he gets hit with the water, and finally he has Bud come over to try it, and of course nothing happens to Bud. And then Lou tries it again, and he gets hit with the water again. So he's looking around, and he opens up this little drawer by the captain's desk. And there's the map. And again, he does this incredible take when he realizes it's the map. And he all of a sudden turns into Lou, who can't talk. You know, like when he sees Dracula or whatever. That whole thing, when he finds the map. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of nostalgic to see him do that. So they find the map, and Bud says, okay, now I want you to memorize it and then eat it. Bud's thinking. And Lou says, oh, don't worry, I have a photo cell mind. A photo cell? On Captain Kidd's ship? in 1685 or whatever it is?
Yep.
Yeah, a photo cell. So, you know. Anyway, so Lou eats the map, and he's got the hiccups as he's eating it, and he ad-libs. Actually, a pretty clever joke. He's, and he goes, oh, that must be one of the rocks on the island. It's the map of Skull Island. So anyway, he has to be nice to them again because Lou is the only person who has an image of the map and it's in his mind, so they can't kill the boys. But before he leaves, Bud promises him that he could draw a mustache on Captain Kidd's painting. And he starts to do it, and all of a sudden the painting slides away like magic, and there's the real Captain Kidd with the exact same background as the painting. Now, we have to, like, you know, realize that this is a comedy, sort of a fantasy. It's a little weird, but anyway, Lou goes to draw on the real Captain Kidd's face, but he grabs the chalk just in time and does it to Lou. So Lou's got this pink mustache and beard and a little dot on his nose, and Captain Kidd goes over and takes a breath of air. He lifts the window, the one that had all the water, takes a breath of air, and of course, nothing happens. Lou goes over to try it again, and he gets hit with the water. Okay, and the captain is hysterical. He just loves it. Ha, 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 yes, oh, look what happened to you. And he walks over to the door to his cabin, which leads out into the hallway, and gets hit by the water. Now, you couldn't ask for a better punchline, because it's the same intensity that the water hits Lou from the window. And how the hell did this water get into the hallway? It's absurd, and it truly, really is the best punchline you could possibly get. So they are finally at Skull Island, and they're getting closer to the treasure, and I love that they're singing. The pirates are singing like a choir almost while they're rowing into Skull Island, you know, for all their debauchery and, you know, looking for the treasure. But it's really a good song. I mean, play a little bit of the song. By the way, that whole scene reminds me, for some reason, reminds me of a Disney cartoon feature. You know, if there were a boat going to the island, whatever, there would be a song like that being sung before they got to the island. It is very Disney. Okay, so they get to Skull Island, and everybody's screwing everybody else. The captain, he has the boys dig for the treasure. Lou has to find it because he's got the map in his head, and they start digging. Now, this is, again, one of the funniest scenes, and actually the reviewers at the time thought it was a very funny scene. And apparently, this was done in Zombies on Broadway with Brown and Carney, kind of the same gag. They start digging two separate holes, right? And Lou is putting his dirt into Bud's hole without realizing it. So Bud's never making any progress. And he looks over and he says, "What are you doing? You're putting the dirt in my, let's switch places." So they switch places. And Lou starts putting it again in Bud's thing. And then, of course, they switch around again. And Bud is putting it dirt in Lou's hole. But anyway, it's very funny because they keep cutting to Lawton reacting. And he looks disgusted. He's just like, these two morons that I have to trust. But anyway, they get to the point where you hear the clunk and Lou comes up with a skull and he starts doing Hamlet. "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio, blah, blah, blah." And Lawton says, "That's the wrong play." Again, you know, stepping out. But the funny thing is, that gag was suggested by Lawton on the set as they were working.
Oh.
How about that? He had a sense of humor. He had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
He was also a pot smoker, by the way. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. So yeah, there's also a close-up of him, and I think this ends the scene. After they find the treasure, there's some funny dialogue. "Or is that the treasure or his head?" pointing to Lou. Bud says, "No, it's got to be the treasure. This has something in it." So anyway, I think I screwed it up. But anyway, that's the kind of joke it was. And I'm terrible at telling jokes. So Captain Kidd screws Captain Bonnie now that they have the treasure. He's going to keep it, and he's going to kill her. He's really quite deadly. So she's screwed. And the boys also now. They leave them in the hole, and two pirates start burying them alive. And they think that they're helping them. "Oh, we should go out and help them. Well, that's really nice of them." "Yeah, it really is." All this dubbed dialogue from the hole underneath. Anyway, so this starts another song that should have been catapulted towards the sun. it's called North of Nowhere, South of Somewhere. And the song is Nowhere. And should be South of Somewhere. It's terrible. And all, you know, the pirates ask for a song. They're all drunk. All the pirates are drunk. They're partying. They're having a great time. It's nighttime. And they sing this cockamamie ballad. You know, you'd think they'd sing a rousing pirate song, but no. It's South of Somewhere. So did I talk about Fran Warren?
No.
I don't think I did.
Nope.
Yeah, because she's, you know, she's important. This is her first movie. And I don't know about you, but when she started singing at first, she sounded almost too modern for this movie. Do you know what I mean? It was almost like a record from the 50s rather than a sweet singer from the old days. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, it's just weird to me. She was born Frances Wolfe with two Fs in the Bronx. So everybody cheer. And that was in 1926. She started out in the chorus at the Roxy, known to be the largest theater in New York. Eventually, she joined Art Mooney's big band as a singer. And during those years, Billy Eckstein, the great singer, gave her the name Fran Warren, and she took it. She was with Charlie Barnett's band for 2 years. And then she joined Claude Thornhill's band, where she had her first chart buster. And that was a song called Sunday Kind of Love, a really, really great song.
Oh, yeah.
Made the charts. Yeah, I want a Sunday kind of love. And then she went solo. She had a number three hit with Tony Martin. You remember him from the Tenement Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sang with him, Tony Martin, when he was in his 90s. I went to see him perform. And just the two of us after the show sang, If It's You, There's a Da 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 from The Big Store. What a nice man he was. But anyway, they had a song called, are you ready? I Said My Pajamas and Put On My Prayers. Okay. that was a number three hit. And that, okay. That was the 50s when everybody was white and mayonnaise was the national anthem. So anyway, she toured later on in shows like MAME, South Pacific, and The Pajama Game. And towards the end, she started touring with Harry James's big band as a vocalist. She passed away in 2013, not too long ago, on her 87th birthday. And that was in her home in Connecticut. All right, so that's Fran Warren. And they did that horrible song for the Pirates. And I don't know what they were doing in Pittsburgh. But come on, play ball with me. And this begins a big, grand chase. They get the idea to dress Lou up like Captain Kidd, who has been hit on the head with a shovel mm-hmm. when chasing Lou. Now, when Alex Gottlieb approached Charlie Lawton about his stuntman, Lawton looked at him like he was crazy and said, Are you kidding me? No, I'm doing my own stunts. I want to do my pratfalls. I'm here to learn from the boys, and I'm doing my own falls. And he did. He looks great. He nice. Had a great time. They're like 2 5-year-olds running around, Lou and Charlie Lawton. They're they're in their underwear, and he's Lawton's in his long johns, and he keeps getting hit on the head and taking falls. It's just really, really great to see the two of them working like this. Anyway, so Lou gets everybody to think he's Captain Kidd. They're all drunk. It's nighttime. I don't really buy it either, but but it works in the movie. And whatchamacallit, Lawton's running around like crazy. At one point, he looks at us and says, This thing's driving me crazy. Which way did he go? You know, he says, He went that way, and he runs out. But anyway, they're cavorting around, and then they do an old gag where Lou is hiding under this tarp, and you see the outline of his head at the top of it. And Captain Kidd takes out a knife and sticks it right on the top of his head. I mean, he's a monster. Mm-hmm. And he goes out dancing to the sailor's hornpipe. Yeah, whistling it, you know, as he does the little dance. It's great. It may be my favorite moment from Lawton. Anyway, so he goes out and Lou undoes the tarp, and you see that it was a cabbage on the end of a sword that he actually put the knife into. So that was the big reveal. So, okay, it turns out that Captain Bonnie arranged for her ship and her crew to come and save her. And actually, Bud tells Lou to take care of the boat. And I'm thinking, he couldn't untie the boat in Lost in Alaska. And he couldn't untie the boat in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. What was Bud thinking? The man cannot untie a boat. So while he's doing that, her ship and her crew sees who he thinks is Captain Kidd, because Lou is still dressed like Captain Kidd. So they start firing at him. Now, at this point, I write about this in the book, Captain Bonnie is holding a torch, and she's waving it to her boat, which is out to sea. Mm-hmm. And Bud comes running into the scene just as the torch is heading right for his face. And Bud managed to move away at the last second and continue with the scene. But boy, oh boy, that came really, really close. You should take a look at that, guys, if you want to see. It's really something. So anyway, it turns out that they're all saved. Leif Erikson becomes the second mate. And of course, Lou is made the captain of the ship. And they sing the song. They reprise the song from the beginning. We owe it to the skipper. And you see Lou kind of doing Charles Laughton with the fat cheeks, you know. And then he points over and there's Captain Kidd hanging upside down from the yardarm for the entire journey. And they cut to a close-up of him yelling, Morgan! Right? Who was Leif Erikson. Mm-hmm. Now, that was not the original ending. And why they changed this, I will never know. And I'll never forgive them. But apparently, if you look closely, he's saying, "Hey, Abbott," which would have been a much funnier ending. But it's Morgan, and Lou is the captain, and everybody's singing, and that is the end of Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd. And it is a favorite. It's a special favorite of mine. You know, it may not be the greatest script in the world, and there are a few flubs, but to see Charles Laughton, my all-time favorite actor, working with two of my all-time favorite comedians is just, it's a blessing. I look at it as a blessing. There are certain things I look at in my show business, my classic showbiz life. One of them is the Ed Wynn show. He lasted two seasons. Yeah, in 1949 and 1950. And to me, it's an honor to watch him work, you know, because this is what he used to do on Broadway back then. Same stuff. So anyway, this is that kind of thing, to see the anomaly of Charles Laughton and Abbott and Costello together. The critics were charmed. They were charmed. This was like backup for them. Good reviews all the way around. And Laughton was a large part of that, no pun intended. So this is it. Now, Jerry, give me your rundown, your feelings.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons that you and I connected in doing this podcast is that we have extremely similar tastes.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, this one and Jack and the Beanstalk never really showed up in the Boston market where I grew up. You know, we had Abbott and Costello every Saturday night, but it was just the Universals.
Oh, was that Channel 68?
No, it was actually a station out of Worcester, 27, I think it was.
Last night I was watching an old Universal Ritz Brothers movie called Hiya Chum, and you could see it was recorded on video off of Channel 68 in Boston.
Yep. as a result, this is one that I've not seen all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And it grabbed me the very first time I saw it, and I think it's everything. Everything about it just works beautifully. Having Laughton there, whom I also think is a fine actor, having him in it, the color is just, it pops.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where today you might look at it and go, oh, come on, they colorized this. Nope.
Yeah, but the good colorizing, you know?
Yeah.
Not that cheap one you see on YouTube all the time.
No. But
I was imitating you.
But yeah, it's in my top 10 of their films.
Oh, that's always great.
Always.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way because I love it. I just love it. It's one of those movies that I had to order from Warner Archive because it's really the only place you can get it.
Yep.
And once I got it, I think I watched it like three times in a row when I first got the DVD. And I've watched it many times since. It's one of those that you can watch again and again. And just the freak value of, like I say, Laughton and the boys, for one thing. And the color, the beautiful color. And it really is it's like a musical pantomime, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a British Christmas pantomime. And that's how you should look at it. So in the meantime, we are looking forward to the next one. I know I am because, you know, the next one gets a pretty bad rap, and that's Abbott and Costello Go to Mars. And I know they don't go to Mars. They go to Venus, and which is all part of the joke. And I have to tell you, it's one of my faves. I love Abbott and Costello Go to Mars. And I'm going to watch it again and try to prove to you that it is worth watching and worth enjoying. And I don't know how you feel about it, Jer. I'm sure you've seen it before.
Oh yeah, a number of times. And it's got a lot of things about it that I enjoy. Let's put it that way. I don't want to go too deep into it because, you know, that's next episode.
Right.
But it's an enjoyable film. Yes,
I think so too. But anyway, we'll get to that. Episode 33. My goodness, we're heading towards, you know, the climax here. Mm-hmm. But you know, in a way, it's not that I'm looking forward to the end of the films because we're going to start looking into more esoterica. But I'm also looking forward to turning this podcast into more of a classic comedy showcase. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
where we talk about things that we love and want to share, and even things that we don't love that we want to share.
Yeah.
And even Sonny and Cher. So we could do all of those things because, Jerry, I got you, babe. You know? All right. enough bad humor on this summer day. It's the bad humor man. Jingling. And Jerry, I just want to wish you a wonderful 2 weeks until we meet again. And again, it's just been an absolute pleasure.
Always. Yes, same to you, my friend.
Thank you. Okay, gang, get a hold of Abbott and Costello and Me, Captain Kidd. Give it a watch, and only when it's retiring, okay? Because that's when you give things a watch. Okay, on that note, goodbye, everybody.